Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for June 11th, 2013. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Brian Button about a mechanism that helps maintain proper hydration of airway mucus. The airways are protected by a coat of mucus that keeps them free of pathogens and toxins. The mucus is secreted by airway epithelial cells, and it traps inhaled particles such as viruses, bacteria, and other pathogens, as well as allergens and toxins. Motile cilia on the airway epithelial cells beat to move the mucus up the respiratory tract where it and the trapped particles can be expelled into the throat. Mucus is a sort of slippery soup that consists of water, salts, and proteins, and its viscosity and its elasticity are determined by the relative amounts of each of these constituents that are secreted. In diseases such as cystic fibrosis and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, mucus is too thick, and so it's difficult to expel. In a paper published in this issue of Science Signaling, Brian Button and his colleagues report on a feedback mechanism that helps control the hydration of mucus so that it's maintained at a viscosity that allows the cilia to push it out of the airways. Button spoke to me by telephone from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Hello, Dr. Button. Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Hello. It's nice to meet you.
The viscosity of mucus is very important for its proper function. So if it's too thick, it's difficult to expel. But if it's too thin, it doesn't trap small particles very well. How is the composition of mucus regulated to control that viscosity?
The viscosity of the mucus is controlled by two things. First of all, the amount of mucus or the rate of mucus that's produced by either the glands or the superficial epithelia. They have specialized cells called goblet cells that produce the mucus. So the rate of mucus production as well as the amount of fluid or water that's in the airway surface. And those are controlled by the amount of water that comes out of the glands and the goblet cells, but also by other cells on the airway surface. These are secretory cells that can secrete more water. And so the net of those processes is that you have mucus that's produced with extra fluid to hydrate that mucus layer.
So it's a concerted effort of both the specialized goblet cells and the other epithelial cells working together to control the viscosity. It's not just one cell type.
That's exactly right. You have to have both of those. When you talk about disease states where you get one that provides more than the other. So if you have too much mucus and not enough water, that's a bad thing. Conversely, if you have less water and the same mucus production, then certainly that can cause bad things. And like you mentioned, if you have too much water and not enough mucus, that could potentially be restrictive for particle and trapping by the mucus layer.
How are changes in the composition of mucus controlled?
So if you look at the mucus layer, the thing that makes up the viscosity is a protein called mucins, and these are produced by the glands, which the glands are really in the trachea and the bronchi, but not further down into the areas called the bronchioles. So the mucus that is produced by the glands and goblet cells, it gets secreted on the airway surface. If this is a concentrated layer that there's too little fluid on the surface of the airways, what can happen is that the process by which the airways can detect that increase in concentration is really two ways. The first is that there's a constant secretion of regulators of ion channels on the surface of the airway epithelium, and this happens via release of things like ATP. And ATP can signal back to the airway epithelium to increase the secretion of more fluid. So what happens is an increase in the level of ATP on the airway surface results in a further stimulation of the so-called purine receptors, the receptors for the ATP molecules, and this can in turn stimulate additional fluid secretion by the airway epithelial cells. So that's the first process that happens. So this is really, if there's too little fluid and you need to have more fluid on the surface, it can regulate the ion transporters. And the way it does this is regulating chloride secretion and turning off sodium absorption. And the net effect of that process is that you get more fluid on the surface of the airways. And this now will dilute the ATP that's out there because it's constantly being produced and constantly being degraded. And so it's really a cycle. And if you decrease the amount of fluid, you've concentrated that ATP where it can stimulate now feedback and stimulate fluid secretion to dilute those back out to normal levels. Now, the second process is that, and that's what's really related in this paper, is that if you have an increase in the concentration of the mucus, so if it's now more viscous, if it's more tenacious, what can happen is that now the cells can recognize that through a mechanosensitive process and again stimulate now in a further increase in ATP release. And that stimulation of ATP can cause a stimulation in net fluid secretion by modulating the ion channels on the airways.
That mechanosensory mechanism that the cells use to measure, for lack of a better word, the viscosity or the consistency of the mucus is mediated by cilia?
Exactly. So this process is mediated by beating cilia, not just the cilia themselves, but it's really the impact of what happens when the cilia are trying to propel a thickened mucus layer. So what happens is the cilia are constantly beating, and if it takes more force for them to propel mucus across the surface, that is mechanically sensed and responded to by a stimulation in ATP release rates.
So there are two types of cilia in mammals. Most mammalian cells have a primary cilium that's non-motile, and it functions as kind of a cellular antenna to sense the external environment. And so they can detect extracellular signaling molecules as well as mechanical forces like blood flow or some other sort of fluid flow like mucus. And then some cells also have motile cilia like these airway epithelial cells that beat to push the mucus out. You said that the airway epithelial cells sense the concentration of the mucus by how much force it takes to move those beating cilia. Is there any other precedence for motile cilia having a sensory function like that? That's a role that I often think of as limited to primary cilia.
Sure. So actually, there's quite a literature on the use of motile cilia in sensing. There is significant evidence out there in other things, such as lower eukaryotes, that there is a sensing by motile cilia. For example, paramecium, they're really covered with motile cilia. And when they strike an object, the cilia mechanically sense that they're touching another object, and that causes an increase in the intracellular calcium. And the paramecium responds by swimming in the opposite direction and can basically do this to work its way around fixed objects. And this has been known for probably over 100 years. But in humans, we have a number of processes where motile cilia can be used to sense. A good example of that is it's been shown in the brain in ependymal cells that the cilia can sense changes in the viscosity of the cerebrospinal fluid. And it responds to that by stimulating further increase in cilia beat frequency. This is also a common theme in other types of epithelium. Another good example would be in the oviduct, where they can sense an increase in the viscosity of the fluid and respond by increasing the cilia beat frequency. There's also, it's been shown previously in human airway epithelia, where a change in viscosity, which initially would slow down the cilia because now it's having to strain more, can respond by stimulating cilia beat frequency to sort of maintain cilia beat frequency at a given rate. And so if you slow it down, that's a bad thing, so you want to speed it back up. In addition to regulation by cilia beat, there's also been studies that have shown that cilia can also act as chemosensors for a variety of things, including in the airways, which have shown that they actually have things like taste receptors on the motile cilia of airway epithelial cells, which has been thought that it really provides a protection of the airways from noxious compounds by speeding up the cilia and increasing mucociliary clearance.
Airway epithelial cells sense the concentration of the mucus through their beating cilia, but do they also have a primary cilium?
So It's interesting. Airway cells during development, before cilia start to form on these cells, actually do have a primary cilia. But it's been shown that right before ciliagenesis, the primary cilia is reabsorbed. And so a well-differentiated final ciliated cell do not have a primary cilia. So what is the purpose of the primary cilia? Well, it's thought that during development, for cilia to form and to know which way to beat, it's thought that primary cilia have a sensory role in determining which way is out. For example, amniotic fluid in utero is actually produced by the alveolar cells. Down in the deep lung, after birth, these are absorptive, but they're actually secretory in utero. And what happens is fluid will come out and cause a shear stress or a flow across the surface of the airways. And it's thought that primary cilia sense which way is out. And so during ciliagenesis, the cells will know which way to beat. But once they're differentiated in the motile cilia form, there is no more primary cilia on ciliated cells. So now they rely totally on sensing through the motile cilia.
How is information about the concentration of the mucus communicated from the cilium to the cells to tell them whether to release more water or to make more mucin?
Yes, if say you have an airway that's now dehydrated and you have a much thicker, more tenacious, viscous mucus that it's trying to propel. So it's trying to grab onto the mucus and it's taking a lot more force to propel that mucus. This information is transmitted through a process that we really don't understand through the cilia, probably to the cytoskeleton where it's being recognized by mechanosensors within the membrane. And this results in an increase in intracellular calcium that elicits a change in the release of ATP from the cell. And now the changes in the extracellular ATP concentration can come back and activate the purine receptors, these special receptors for ATP or its breakdown product, which is called adenosine. It can actually recognize those on the cell surface. This activation of this receptor elicits a G-protein coupled response to stimulate chloride secretion and net reduction in sodium absorption. So the net process of chloride secretion and sodium absorption is an increase in the sodium chloride concentration on the airway surface. And because the airways are a leaky epithelium, this would result in more water that's being accumulated on the airway surface, thus diluting the mucus layer. So now the mucus has more water. It reduces its viscoelasticity, and now what you get is you get a lessening of the force back onto the cilia itself. So this is just the feedback mechanism.
In diseases like cystic fibrosis and COPD, the mucus is too thick for the cilia to expel it efficiently. Why is the mucus too thick in those contexts? Is this feedback mechanism that you've identified involved in that?
Yes, so we've been really interested to find out why this feedback mechanism potentially fail in various lung diseases. We have explanations that might account for it, but we're still working on that aspect of this project. So one of the problems is that when you get an increase in concentration of the mucus, this mechanism would propose that you increase fluid secretion, but we know that doesn't happen in CF, as well as COPD. COPD and CF have similar manifestations, thickened mucus on the airway surface, and that happens via different ways for each disease. In cystic fibrosis, this is the result of an increase in fluid absorption because the chloride secretion mechanism, one of the two different ion channels that regulate chloride secretion in airway epithelia, the cystic fibrosis transmembrane conductance regulator called CFTR, this is defective in CF patients, but they have another mechanism called the calcium-activated chloride channel or the alternative chloride channel. And so while normal people have two pathways to elicit chloride channel transduction, CF patients only have one, and they're certainly more susceptible to things that cause dehydration of the airway surface. In COPD, there is an increase in the level of mucus production from the goblet cells in the airway surface, resulting in thickened mucus. Now, why mucus can concentrate and this feedback mechanism fails, it's possible that in the case of CF, is that because they only have one chloride channel that can be activated, is that that makes them more susceptible to things like infections. So we have previously shown that viral infections can result in a decrease in the amount of ATP on the cell surface, or an increase in the degradation rate of ATP. And let's say you have thicker mucus and ATP release gets increased, this ATP gets rapidly chewed up by the enzymes that are increased with viral and bacterial infections. Therefore, this feedback mechanism no longer works. So that's what happens in CF. In COPD, one of the things that happens is that COPD patients that smoke cigarettes, this can also lead to a decrease in CFTR. And this has been recently shown in the last couple years that cigarette smoking can downregulate the level of CFTR, giving them almost CF-like disease, where again, they might be very susceptible to insults like viral infections and bacterial infections. But we're still trying to work out how does the system fail? Now, another possibility that we've been thinking about is that what happens when the mucus gets dehydrated, we've previously shown that as mucus concentrates, this results in the folding over of the cilia layer. And we know that to sense the viscoelastic properties or the viscous properties of mucus really requires the action of beating cilia that are really actively propelling the mucus. So when the cilia are folded over because of this really thickened mucus layer, they're no longer able to beat. And so it's possible that in this condition, they're no longer able to sense the viscosity of the overlying mucus layer.
And so really concentrated mucus can essentially just shut the whole regulatory system down if the cilia can't move.
That's correct. So there's probably a multi-pronged attack that can happen in the disease states. There's probably several layers of failure between the cilia layer and that of this feedback mechanism.
Thank you, Dr. Button, for speaking with me.
Great. Well, thanks, Annalisa. I appreciate it.
That was Brian Button, senior author of a paper published in the June 11th issue of Science Signaling. That paper is by Button and colleagues, and it's titled Mechanosensitive ATP Release Maintains Proper Mucus Hydration of Airways. And that concludes the Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or comments, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.